You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Watching Tottenham on a Tuesday night.
Hello everyone and welcome to a What a Night. What a bloody night, eh? If you were wondering, no, there is no precedent for what happens when a manager has to leave because he's literally going to jail. But now we've set it and the outcome is you lose 3-0 and go out of the Europa League. To help me go through that absolute I don't even know what to call it. Welcome to Hunter, to Sean, to Jude. Dan's not about because I don't think it's going too far to say I'm genuinely worried from Dan's response on the WhatsApp group last night.
His messages were just that of like, I don't know anymore about this.
It was like existential.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know anymore about anything.
Mm. I think he's just going to spend some time at a lake looking over and skimming stones, just making sure he's okay.
You need to invite him down to Brighton for the weekend, G, to sort of sit by the beach. Afternoon.
Stroke his hair. Take him to go and see some slam poetry. There was a real... Should we just start with where we're at? Like, kind of where everyone is at, sort of feelings-wise. Everyone get their journals out. We had the Arsenal game the other day and we kind of broke it down afterwards. I felt pretty rough after that. I think a couple of you might have felt like, yeah, we had that coming, and maybe I can't remember who sort of went more towards the, it, like, you can't play that way against Arsenal. It's just unacceptable. So I'd assume that everyone was in the same boat of like, you now need to go out and perform in the Europa. There is just no discussion. You must go out and put out a decent performance minimum in the Europa League and get through to the next round. That's a fairly standard starting point, right?
Yeah, I don't think any of us would argue against that. It was a must win, or at least not lose game. Do you know what I mean? It seemed pretty clear what needed to happen. So what actually happened is, unbelievable in a way. Honestly, unbelievable.
Okay, so with that in mind, Sean, when did you have the point where there was a little bit of the first sound of a faint alarm in the background?
I don't think it ever really clicked in. And it's just weird because you could kind of see the danger in the first half. You could see like they were making some decent attacks and they were making some good chances and really kind of worrying us. Then we got into half time and it was 0-0. And I think at that point, it's just like, okay, just 45 minutes. Just do not concede two goals and we're fine. And then they get the first. And then I think that's probably the point where the alarm should have started ringing, but it didn't. It was almost just kind of like, I just kind of accepted what was about to happen. Like it was, it's like the same story you've seen 100 times before and you're seeing it again. It's literally kind of Groundhog Day for Spurs fans. Like we knew where this was going. This is a result of a lot of the crap that we've had to watch, particularly in the second half of this season. Because when we don't show up, we really don't show up. Like, I don't think there's been like a middle of the road performance from us in ages. And when, like, I was on the press conference the other day and I asked Lucas, you know, why were we so bad at Arsenal? And he basically just said, we weren't intense enough, we didn't want it enough. And I think that's, first of all, outrageous to say about a derby game. But it says a lot about what the hell our problems have been this season. The games that we don't win, the games that we get, in fact get battered in, because there's very few kind of close games, like, we deserve that. Like, that's the problem. We're so far away from being a consistently good team. We're so streaky, we're either so hot or just completely off it. And we've been coming to this. We'll get onto it in a bit, but Lloris said last night, like, this is a reflection on everything that's happening at the club right now.
Okay, so as you said, we'll hit the brakes on Hugo, because I think we've got to do a bit of a deep dive into that. Jude, so we concede the first, which is worrying. We concede the second. How do you feel?
That's also worrying. Yeah,
probably more worrying. although weirdly, I was less worried once we conceded the second goal, because didn't feel that we were going to concede before extra time. It was suddenly like, oh God, we've got to play now. How did you feel once the full-time whistle went?
Well, a little bit deflated, I'd imagine. It's quite funny how Spurs fans have that sixth sense or spider sense for, you know, what might happen. Because we had messages popping into our WhatsApp group around like half-time being like, they could go out here. This could be us done, and it's very, very Spursy. But I didn't really feel like Spurs were the favourites to go and get the third goal of the game, even though that was some of the chat was from the BT commentators, just because Dynamo were just playing through. They were playing through Tottenham so easily throughout. It was pretty similar to the Arsenal game. They were finding loads of space out wide. I know Spurs had loads and loads of players like Kane and Bale on the pitch, and people you'd think could go out and get that third goal. But it seemed like overly optimistic to be like, yeah, we can just turn this around in the space of extra time. I didn't feel like favourites going into extra time, I'd say.
Felt like any time there was a dangerous ball in the attack in third, like it would just pop up or bobble, you know, or just be like, it never really sat for anyone, but it had that feeling like it wasn't going to sit for anyone all night, which is weird because on the flip side, Orsic, like, he made it look like he was playing on a carpet, you know, he just looked stunning at the other end. So, Hunter, take us home. So, so then the third goal goes in for them. Where are you at then?
It's that weird one where you sort of go beyond anger or being upset or anything and you just start sort of laughing, which is a horrible place to be as a fan. I don't know if everyone else was there, but you do end up in this sort of like...
It's almost like a maniac laugh.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what more could possibly go wrong? These guys are not... I mean, they had a good night. I think they played some good stuff, but it was like, it was so abject that when the third goal went in, I was like... Yeah, they deserve it. They can't be an argument to say they don't deserve it here. They've completely outplayed us for the 90 minutes. They've created plenty of chances. We've handed them chances. There's not been sort of like, we've not been hard done by. And I have to say, after that, I thought maybe we'll sneak one because they've sat really deep and we did create, you know, I think they cleared it off the line twice, but it should have never got to that point ever. Against a team in UEFA's 19th ranked league. Do you know what I mean? It's embarrassing.
Then began the kind of fallout on social media. If people who are not on social media are listening, I'm aware there's probably like I don't know, a few percent. Maybe there's a few people who actively chose to ignore it on social. I'm sorry that I'm bringing it up. Then that was kind of the very worst of Spurs Twitter. Like watching that unfurl. It really was a grubby watch. So we're going to sack off the good and the beautiful because I just don't think there's anything that we can get from it. But I do want to kind of take a little bit of a look into the first argument, which people seem to be getting into, which is about tactics, players, strategy, whether there was a clear method there and whether players just ignored instructions or whether the approach was wrong. So that can be our bad to begin with. Or is it somewhere halfway in between? Sean, what do you think?
I think it's ugly because it's just, what can we say? Like, either it's, I think it's a bit of both, but I do think the manager, he's either making the point and it's not getting across, or it is getting across and the players just aren't kind of performing to it. Either way, there's something very, very wrong. There's something clearly very wrong. And I think the way that that's going on about now, like the players just being so either unreceptive to the tactics or the tactics being bad, this is, at the end of the day, that's why Pochettino had to go. That is why the difficult discussion, the most difficult decision that Daniel Levy's probably ever had to make in his life, that's why it had to boil down to that. And we're at that same point again now. And I think that you just have to make that the ugly because that's the end.
That's the end.
That's the end, is it? Should we just end the podcast?
No titles.
Today we choose to die.
The discussion you're having there, though, Hainsey, is it's almost like irrelevant. Do you know what I mean? If the players aren't doing it or if the manager's not doing it, because whatever's happening now, it's just broken. The players aren't listening, or they are, and it's not tactically astute, and the manager's not getting across what he wants to say, which is a massive failure on his part, or it's a mixture of both. But what we can see now is it's fundamentally not working. So whether Mourinho could still be the best manager in the world and we could have some of the best players in the world, but if it doesn't, if it ends up like that in a 3-0 loss to a team like Dinamo Zagreb, something has to change. Fundamentally, something has to change because it's not working, is it?
I feel like I should almost put on a staunch defense here for kind of like the tactics or the strategy guys, because there is like there's a massive swathe of the Tottenham fan base. There is a bigger swathe of this fan base than I realized that are very much looking at it like these players are just not performing. Like they're just not performing. And you can't, how can you legislate for, I mean, Gareth Bale had a chance, he's 8-9 yards out, he goes in and the game's over. Harry Kane had a chance, he's 6 yards out, he goes in, the game's over, he has a header. You sort of almost put your life on them taking one of those 3 chances. What's the response to those people that sort of would say that?
Well, they say that it's the player's fault.
Yeah, or the idea that there was no pressing yesterday, and Mourinho's told players to press, like he's told players to be at it. I mean, he by the end of the game, he had the first 11 pretty much on.
I think Miguel Delaney in The Independent wrote a really good piece this week about how every team left in the Champions League is like an attack first kind of team. Like Simeone's Atleti going out was like, it felt like the kind of death of defense first football, and Mourinho, I don't think he's quite extreme as Simeone, but he's definitely defence first. That he's made no secret of that. That's been his case the whole time. But I think we're getting to a point nowadays with football where I think everyone's kind of sussed that the more chances you make in a game, the more likely you are to score. And you need to keep making more chances to have those better chances. You need to put yourself in the best position possible to do that. I mean, we, every single weekend, Brighton make a million chances, but they hardly score any. That's down to their finishing. But it gets people talking about, that's like kind of the right way to play football. And I think maybe that's where Mourinho's come unstuck in modern times. Just, it's not as easy as to find space on counters like that. Maybe sometimes it's not as easy to be as defensive as it was back when he first came to the Premier League. Like,
If the plan was yesterday to sit and counterattack, as it seemed it did, because we're very deep again, the selection of players was quite strange. And I think these are where the manager has to take the blame, right? He selects the team, he sets them up. So to have Lamela, Dele, Lucas. Got a lot of dawdlers on the board with Winks and Sissoko behind them. You're not giving... I mean, we've said this before. Winks and Sissoko doesn't work as a two in the middle. It just doesn't. Even Mourinho earlier this season said outright, Sissoko cannot play central midfield. He's a right midfielder. And yet, he's there starting a really important Europa League game for us in central midfield. So there you have to question that decision. But then also, I see a lot of people saying, well, he's telling them to press. Well, they don't look like they know how to press.
And the funniest comment ever, by the way.
Yeah, well, look, we've said it before. Look, shouting press is good because you want your team to get out and meet them. But it does look, and this is purely just from looking at the games at quite an extent, it does look like they are still going in ones. They're not setting traps. And that doesn't come down to bad tactics on the pitch. It comes down to players not knowing how to do that. And so, I mean, I'm not suggesting that Mourinho doesn't teach them on the training pitch how to set traps and blah, blah, blah. But it does look like, especially against Arsenal, Hensley, you pointed this out to me, they weren't pressing. They were just dropping. Every time Arsenal got the ball, it was get back, get goal side. And we, I mean, again, last night, I couldn't tell you really what happened last night. Do you know what? It's become like a bit of a blur in my, because we never had the ball. We couldn't hold on to the ball for 5 seconds. Even when the ball was dropping centre-backs, they weren't taking a touch and playing. They were just whacking it back into the opponent's half. So it was just like, last night was bizarre. I honestly, it's one of the weirdest games I've ever watched for Spurs, and it was not that enjoyable.
Let me put a little bit of meat on the bones on a couple of those points as well. So off the back of our pod the other day, I wanted to, I'm not sure if I said this on the pod actually, no, I definitely didn't say it on the pod. I wanted to watch the Arsenal game again because there was so much chat around what had happened and what had gone wrong. And as the point that I made at the beginning of the show, in that the fan base is so split and there were so many different opinions. And I wanted to kind of check my own eye test. You know, I think a lot of people within the football space would say like the eye test is usually the most important thing. You as people that watch a lot of football, you usually know fairly instinctively how you feel about a performance or how a performance is playing out. But there was so much chat around the Arsenal game about players letting the manager down or the manager's letting the players down in terms of tactics that he chose, that I was like, I want to watch this again because I want to be sure that I'm not getting gaslighted by one section or the other, which it feels like we consistently are at the moment. And it's not, I just on a personal level, I don't think there can be any claim that we were set up to press Arsenal, because essentially our defensive strategy was almost like a horseshoe. It was to make sure every single player was behind the ball when we conceded possession and then gradually retreat and make sure that Arsenal were managed in terms of how quickly they could progress the ball through the pitch. So we sat slowly deeper and deeper. And even when we went out to go and meet Arsenal on the edge of their own box, it involved us having 11 men behind the ball and just managing the way in which Arsenal brought the ball forward. There was no pressure on Gabriel or David Luiz pretty much at any point, or Leno for that matter. So with that in mind, then coming into this game, if you actually look at the stats, I think the reason why, Hunter, you can't actually say like what really happened. When you look at the stats, It was a pretty nothing game. There wasn't a huge amount to pick between the two teams in terms of like massively one side having loads more possession, massively one side having loads more chances. I think they had more on target chances potentially than us, but there's not a huge amount to see between the stats. So if we're to peel back the layers a little bit more, considering that the game was relatively even, is it unfair to lay blame at Mourinho when a lot of people are saying, is this just a DNA thing? Is this just a thing that Spurs have got in the locker that we have always had in the locker? Until we have a massive change, like a massive club-wide change, this will just be something that is there, that exists. Jude, I'm chucking that to you because I'm very aware that I've been talking for a long time there.
It's a biggie. It's a biggie.
Let's go down to the pier to answer this one.
Well, just in isolation for that game, I think just regardless of stats or whatever, you should have enough to avoid throwing away a 2-0 lead at Dynamo Zagreb with the players that are out there. However, the team selection was very hodgepodge, and I think Spurs did have most of the ball throughout the game. I don't think it wasn't one side or the other, but it was what they were doing with it. And I think Zagreb were about 15 shots up to 4, like midway through the second half. So that just sort of shows there's a real lack of idea in how to get the ball to Kane, or you know, how the wide players like Lamella or Mora could drift infield and get those shots away. A DNA thing, it comes back to a sort of painful rebuild, that doesn't it, where we're sort of we're seeing it in full effect of, you know, in reverse of what it might have been a few years ago. It probably is a DNA thing, I'd imagine.
What you're saying there is right there, Jude, and I know we want to talk about it separately, but Hugo almost touched on it.
Well, let's get into it. Go on,
because Hugo almost touched it when he said, "You used to be able to trust each other. We used to be able to rely on each other, and we were much closer." Now, obviously, something's changed. We sort of knew that after the Champions League final, something changed. Something happened beyond Poch just not coming back, basically, for pre-season. People fell out. Trippier said things happened behind the scenes, right? And then Mourinho comes in, and Mourinho might still be suffering from having too many players left over from whatever's happening, whatever happens now. You know, Dele being left out. Danny Rose is still at the club. It's not a great situation, that one. You know, Harry Winks, the golden boy who was going to be our central midfielder, can't get a game now. It does feel like there's a lot of sort of stale relationships that were big at Tottenham at one point. You know, Dele and Dyer, they were, you know, it was Dele and Dyer, but now neither of them are first choices. It just feels like there's a lot of different relationships pulling behind the scenes. And last night just felt a culmination of like people feeling like they didn't want to be there, or like, I don't know, because of how abject a lot of the performances were, it just felt like a lot of people being like, I don't want to be picked in the Europa League. I want to be picked in the Premier League. I don't want to be starting as a sort of backup. I want to be there every single week. And although obviously you have to play your way in, I think what Hugo Lloris was saying was that people didn't seem prepared for this game mentally. And you could see that in the performances, right? Like you could see that some people looked off it and looked pissed off. And looked like their legs weren't quite ready. Like Harry Winks had an awful game, a really bad game, and he was pissed off when he came off. And we sort of discussed why we thought he was angry. And I thought maybe he felt like he'd been slightly thrown under the bus, being put into central mid with Sissoko and being overrun for a long, long time. But he had a bad game. It just I don't know. It felt like a lot of things coming to a head last night. I don't know about you guys.
Can I sort of just that? I think you made a really good point there when Lloris said about the relationships piece. But one of the things that I found really difficult with his interview was to try and work out which points were aimed to which person. Like, do you ever have as a kid one of those puzzles where you had like things down one side of a page and things down the other side of the page, and all the wires cross over in different directions? You have to try and work out which wire goes to which letter, for example. It kind of felt like that. I couldn't work out, is that just a call to action for his teammates? Is it like, come on, that was just not good enough as a team? Is it a call to action for the club? Because he sort of said, I can't remember what the exact quote is, so forgive me for paraphrasing, but he said, Shawnee, like it was everything about the club across the board. It was the basics are not right at the club. And I think if you're Daniel Levy, you're probably sitting there being like, well, if you want to talk about basics, let's talk about the training ground that I've made sure that you've got, where it's the best possible training ground you could possibly have. Let's talk about the stadium. It's one of the best stadiums in the world. Like all of the assets are there, like everything's there in order for you to go out and get an elite performance. So what do you think in terms of who he's actually gearing those comments towards.
It screamed very much of like a "I want to start a civil war" kind of thing, didn't it? I think in fairness to Lloris, like, it was quite big of him to come out after a loss like that, and he doesn't usually come out after big losses, but he came out for this one. I feel like he felt like he had to, because it was just so seismic. And I think he felt like he had a point to talk about. He needed to say something. I think that he probably, like Trippier, has seen things at the club are not as they should be. He talked about the togetherness that they used to have and the belief they had in each other, and that's gone. There's no basics, there's no fundamentals. I think it's everyone. I think he is just trying to hammer it home to everyone and make sure that everyone gets the fair share of the blame for how it's got to this point. I don't think he wanted to make it personal with anyone, because he never singled out anyone. He never singled out any player or Jose or Levy or anyone. I think he is just trying to make sure the blame goes far and wide, and it's not put back at one person. It's everyone needs to kind of reevaluate what the hell is going on there.
I believe we're back at the painful rebuild saying again, aren't we? But all roads do lead back to it, because Pochettino saw it 2 years ago. And we're back at that thing where it's going to be players or manager, right? And it's a rock and a hard place. The players or the manager. You can't sack all the players. And the manager's tied to a £30 million contract. So it's a horrible place to be in. But to pick on what you were saying. What do you mean?
Is it things need to change and it's players or manager? Or do you think we might have reached a point where, I'm not saying right now, but I do wonder in the future whether we might have no choice but to look at both, perhaps?
Absolutely. I said, do you know what, at the time when Pochettino said it, I went, give the man what he wants. If he says players need to go, players need to go. You know, when he said Kyle Walker goes for 50 million quid, I was gutted, because I really liked Kyle Walker as a player. I thought he was brilliant. But if he's decided he needs to go, he needs to go. And I would have backed him selling anyone. And I would have backed him getting rid of anyone. But now you have to bring in a manager again. If it's not going to be Mourinho, you have to bring in a manager who has to get to know everyone. Then he has to find out who he wants in his system, who works, who doesn't. You're talking about at least another year. Do you know what I mean? That could just be another year of turnover, because in the summer, it's really hard to sort of... And I think something we have to take into consideration as well is the current financial situation of football. It's not easy to get rid of players, especially if they're not playing well. You probably, you know, Levy's going to... He never takes a cut price for anyone, does he? So it's going to be an interesting sort of a few months from now. I think what you said, Hainsey, about Lloris's comments are quite interesting, in that it's fuel on the fire for both sides of the Mourinho versus players argument, isn't it? Like, both sides are going to say Lloris's comments suggest the players aren't working out, and then the Mourinho out people say, well, Lloris's comments also say that there's something fundamentally not working. And so you just end up you can go in circles with this argument. But I think what we can all see as Tottenham and football fans is that whatever's happening, whatever it is, it's impacting what's happening on the pitch. And I think it comes down to Daniel Levy making the decision, because I don't know if he is still in charge of transfers, but he was when Poch was there, and he's certainly in charge of who's in charge of the club. So
it was like a burnout squad a few years ago, wasn't it? But every player who played last night was either signed by Poch or like brought in through youth. So it's very indicative of how far that squad has come or not. It hasn't really had that fresh energy brought into it as much as it's needed.
Someone mentioned the financial climate, that we're in a different one now and we probably have to sell to buy again. I have little confidence in the board to do that job properly after they said, like, remember there was a meeting with the Supporters Trust and they asked basically, oh, how come in summer 2018 we signed literally no one, which was like quite an unprecedented thing. And there was like, you know, buying and selling players is actually really hard, and it's just like, stop moaning and do your job. So if that was then, when our stock as a club was much, much higher, when we had come top three in the Premier League 3 years in a row, we're still in the Champions League, we at least gave Juventus and Madrid a good run. what are we now? We're going to be eighth, potentially not even in Europe. Nothing. We're going to have absolutely nothing left. Kane and Son might stick around. That's your selling point. You can't come play with Kane and Son as they approach their 30s.
Look, the rumours about Nagelsmann last month aren't going to go away, are they? Or was it even, it was earlier this month, wasn't it? I think the Telegraph and the Independent both said there have at least been conversations made. Say you want about Levy, he understands when businesses aren't working. And right now, if you looked at Tottenham as a business, you'd say something's not working. With Poch, we all agreed he went for the cheaper option. You get rid of the manager rather than the players. Now it's coming to it. It's getting to a point now, right, where it's like, right, we're going to have to go a little bit deeper this time, guys.
I've made a huge mistake.
with that in mind, what do you think happens over the next... I mean, we have 4.5 weeks, I think, until... at the time of recording, we had 4 weeks and sort of 2 days or whatever it is until the League Cup final. What happens now?
He stays. Mourinho stays until the end of the season. It's not, whether we want it or not, I just don't think Levy will get rid of him before the end of the season. I don't see it happening personally. I think I think the form will continue to be patchy in the league. And then I think we'll probably get absolutely battered in the League Cup final. And then I'm not sure if we'll be fired after that. I think it'll probably be the end of the season. Unless there's some incredible run and we get fourth. Look, which isn't, I know it sounds completely mad, but it's not out of the question at all. If Spurs went on a run to the end of the season, our fixture list is fairly kind in comparison.
We're back to one game a week.
Yeah, we're back to one game a week. So, despite Son, our injury list is still very kind. Like we have everyone. I think Mourinho probably stays if he wins the Carabao Cup and gets top four. You know, he's probably here next year as well. These two are less.
I'm trying to work out whether Jude and Sean, whether you were unconvinced by that or whether you're in agreement.
No. I'm right there. I doubt Moo will go before the end of the season, really. And in all fairness, like Spurs have played 2 games a week from about August, and it will, like, in theory, it should be nice just to see than play one game a week and have that strongest 11 play every week rather than anything. Yeah, any sort of starting 11 like last night, which was just hodgepodge.
We're now living that sort of hypothetical, right? We're literally living out the hypothetical, but it feels like it's gone to another level now with the Europa League not being there, because you're no longer spread betting. You know, it's no longer a case of, well, we're still in a few competitions. Like, so there's lots of things happening at once. It suddenly feels like the walls have closed in and we're sort of dangling by a thread, really.
Yeah, we're at the worst stage of the hypothetical now. And particularly for those very weird Mourinho fans, they're not even Spurs fans, they're just guys who follow Mourinho from club to club. You weirdos. You're going to see what happens now. Would you rather a club finish 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th and have a chance at winning a Poxy League Cup, or would you rather just be good all the time? We're going to find
out. I can't tell you what you were shaking your head there. Like, what was your, I don't know, what was your thought process there?
Just like, as Sean said, just the worst hypothetical. And I was just thinking about, I sent it to you in the chat, I think. It just reminds me of Juan de Ramos now. Just like the most patchy league season, we'll get some good wins here, but essentially we're not good enough as a team. The players get called out a lot, and then the manager gets called out a lot. You know, Juan de Ramos led us to our last cup final and our last cup victory. But would I trade that for coming top fourth and being good all season? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Champions League football, I know Wenger used to get rinsed for it all the time, but you know, now we can look at it, especially for what it's worth financially. And if Daniel Levy runs this club like an absolute business, you know, he'll be looking at it going, that's a massive financial loss, especially if Spurs get no European football, which, you know, again, is not, it's not off the cards completely. But to a Carabao Cup final, I guess that's what Jose Mourinho was brought in for. But it's hardly, I mean, if you'd said to Pochettino, throw everything away, you're going after the Europa League or the Carabao Cup, I'm pretty sure we could have done that. But the whole thing about the time under Pochettino is that we fought on every front. Yes, he annoyed some fans by saying the cups aren't as important as they should be. But then look at what his league positions. They're just undeniably brilliant. And to throw away the league in hope of a Carabao Cup or Europa League would have been nice. But it just feels...
Hunter, as you were talking there, I just had this like... hilarious, like sort of laugh out loud in my head anyway, sort of like I was in hysterics there, just this idea of like, if Spurs don't qualify for the Europa League, just someone going into a dressing room and be like, sorry Gaga, you've got to get the leotard back on. We need another 6 shows. Get yourself back out there.
Gaga
picks up the microphone
wins.
And trudges back out.
Sorry, lad.
Just dear me. Let's just finish up with Sean and I kind of had a really good discussion last night on Harry Kane, and my kind of one thing that really scares me or really worries me, I want to be clear where I sit on this. I think Harry Kane is not only a generational talent, but I think he's one of the best players we will ever see come through our football club. And the thing that worries me a lot at the moment is, like Sean said earlier on in the show, is that Kane's a draw. Like, Kane's an actual draw at the moment. If you're not playing in Europe, playing with Harry Kane or being alongside Harry Kane, who is ruthlessly obsessed with scoring and winning and being the best that he can be, is actually it's an exciting proposition. I worry that while Spurs are not in the Europa League towards the back end of the season, if our season does peter out, let's just say we don't win the League Cup, I really, really worry. Like, I have the panic that maybe his head could be turned. But surely you didn't necessarily feel that was the case, right?
Not necessarily, but I think we are now approaching the real territory where I think that Kane would maintain that he wants to stay as long as we're competitive, but I think we're falling away from even that at this point. If we finish outside the top six, maybe even like towards the bottom ends of the top half, like that's where we're in real trouble, where it's going to be harder to convince him to stay, where the money will be harder to stump up to prop up his wages. I just think there was a couple of reports recently that were saying like Kane's loyal to Mourinho and he backs him and all this stuff. I think Kane would be like with any manager. I think he's been loyal to every single manager he's had in his career. I don't think that's a personal thing. And I think what he does want to see at least is a show of ambition from the club. Whether that's getting rid of Mourinho and getting someone like Nagelsmann in, whether that's a promise from Levy that like half the squad's going to be cleared out or whatever. Like, I think that's probably what he wants to see now. Just because, you know, the last couple of weeks, like we were talking up again, like Kane could be the best player in our history. Kane could break Shearer's record. He could break Greaves' record. Those are all things that he can do at Tottenham as long as we're a top six club. We just need to maintain that level when we're drifting away from that and we're kind of allowing that to happen. We can't allow it to happen.
I wonder if this could be quite a defining summer for Harry Kane. Just in that if he doesn't win anything with Spurs, which, you know, we're only on for one trophy and it's against arguably the best team in European football at the moment, then the next step is the Euros. And if England do terribly at the Euros or don't win the Euros, you know, they're probably what, top four with the bookie at the moment. Then it's like, right, I might need to go and win something somewhere else. And so that's where my fear comes in, is just that thing that hangs over some players. You know, a lot, he gets compared to Alan Shearer quite a lot, but you know, Alan Shearer won. It's definitely worrying, Hainsey. I think I'm more on the side of if we don't win the Carabao Cup, he could ask to go this summer. And I don't think many Spurs fans could blame him, to be honest. He's given absolutely everything to this club to try and
given both of his ankles,
given to this exactly club. Given his ankles, his hammies, you know, he's given apps. And when you remember those games like in the Champions League when we were going out in the group stages, and he scores out of nowhere, and you know the amount of big against Barcelona in the Camp Nou, like. You know, big moments that he's turned up and dragged Spurs through games, and I don't think many Spurs fans they'd be gutted, there'd be tears on the streets of N17, but I don't think any Spurs fans would harbour any issues if he said, look, I would want to go. The issue with Kane, as we've discussed previously, is in this financial market with his injury list quite and his age, I don't know if there's anyone out there who's willing to spend that amount of money on a player who might be out with one hit, you can take Kane's ankle out for, what did we have last time? 4 months. It's going to be 100 million plus to take Kane away from Spurs as well. Right.
So he's got 3 years left on the contract. And I suppose that's the kind of vital thing, right. Mm. Is that he would have to, you do get the impression that if Daniel Levy wants to play hardball or wants to kind of keep him for every one of those years, even if we're not successful, for Harry Kane, it would be very difficult to make an argument that he could get a massive move at 30, 3 years further down the line, and go to a side who's going to instantly win the Champions League.
Mm.
So
no
it's all
like that anymore, though, is there? That's the other thing. The only guaranteed success now in football is basically Bayern Munich, right?
Yeah,
and that's the there's a certain man there who also is quite good at kicking the ball into the goal. So, and also they, you know, traditionally Bayern don't go for those colossal mega deals. German football as a whole doesn't really go for those big mega deals. So, I wouldn't blame him for leaving, but I do sort of wonder who and where, apart from Manchester United or Man City. And even there, it's like, you're not only Man City, you're really guaranteed silverware.
You know, all those big boys are obsessed with Erling Haaland as well. Like, he's the guy that they all want, and he's in the
it's
papers
so weird,
every,
isn't it?
Every day.
I mean, not that I want anyone to try and take Harry Kane away from us, but like, when you look at his numbers, it's just, it's ludicrous.
Youth takes precedent now, doesn't it? Over in almost every setting.
I mean, you pay for potential, don't you, nowadays? Yeah, exactly. Rather than like spending 50 million on Peak Zidane, you could go and get a 21-year-old from Schalke for that amount.
and
that's
be
just
cracked.
The way it's going. Yeah, they might not be very good.
The market's just exploded. That's the problem. So now, I mean, with someone with 3 years left on your contract, there is no way that you don't command at least 150 million for someone like that. And also, we might be doing Harry Kane a disservice. Like, to Sean's point, it might be that he's desperate to do it at Spurs, you know? Whatever comes his way, he's desperate to do it at Spurs. And I pray that he is, because I genuinely would give everything.
I hope he is. But like I said, you wouldn't blame him, would you? Would any of us harbour any feelings of resent if he said, like, I need to go and win? I need to guarantee some silverware to...
I do almost think that we need to be ramping up as fans that he's going to be hated if he leaves, and that he might feel his obligation to stay. That might be our best shot.
Release the balloon!
Yeah.
Fly the plane. Yeah. Get the plane out.
Do you know what? The thing I'll be sad about most if he leaves, I'll feel like we failed him.
I feel like
we've let him down, that we had a once in a lifetime talent come and play, or come through the ranks and play for our football club, and we didn't allow him to reach the highest of the points in his career trajectory. It will forever make me upset if he has to go somewhere else to experience the very highs that football brings, you know, the real peak points that football can bring. It'll kill me a little bit. Like, you know, you'll be like a Horcrux. You know, there'll be a little, it will separate my soul a little bit. It'll always be there.
Well, we're going to win the Carabao Cup, remember, lads? So,
excited. Brilliant.
Sean,
right. Well,
Sean does not look convinced.
Like, I feel absolutely like we got not nice and existential. I hope we actually provided the arguments on both sides of the coin. Like, I really hope that we gave an all-encompassing look at where Spurs are at the moment, and let us know if we didn't, you know? And also, I'm just sending solidarity to Sean, by the way. Some of the shit that Sean's receiving on Twitter at the moment is just... Yeah.
I'm
bollocks.
I'm so if you're right now,
if you're one give of those people, yeah, if you're one of those people that is sending abusive stuff at another human being via the internet, you are absolutely ridiculous. Honestly. Stop doing it. It's so stupid.
Solidarity, yeah, Sean. Losers. Keep grinding, bro.
Hashtag one of our own. Right. Enjoy the weekend, guys. I'll see you on Monday, and I will WhatsApp you on Sunday, hopefully, where we're all sitting there and be like, oh, isn't it nice seeing Bale and Kane score a hat-trick each?
What a feeling, what a night.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.